Good afternoon, everyone. I talked about at the feast how we had one particular horse that was kind of a problem horse and was getting out of control, and so we wanted to figure out what we should do about her, how to start training her. Didn't really know where to start. And when we came back from the feast, my parents had boarded their dog at a farm, and there at the farm there were some people there who run the kennel and run the farm, and they are competitive barrel racers and very into horses. And they had mentioned to my parents that there was a guy who is in Texas and he gives clinics and does a lot of teaching about how to do basic training for horses. Mentioned we should check him out. So we went and looked up some of his stuff online. He had some videos and we just started trying some of it out with the horses, and we were impressed at how well it was working. And it was great because we didn't really know what we were doing, and here was kind of a curriculum that laid out how to work with your horses and stay safe, which was a big thing. We didn't want to get killed. So he talks a lot about safety, especially take horses that are young and that are completely untrained and, you know, out of control, and start to bring them under control. And everything that he says is not perfect, but his overall philosophy makes a lot of sense, and it's been very helpful for us. He has a number of techniques and exercises that you do to help get control of your horse and train it to move and respond and change directions and all of these kinds of things that you want to work with on your horses. And so it's been really helpful for us. And that problem child from the feast is now, I think, actually the most responsive of the horses. She was always very smart, obviously, and she just needed that directed. And all of the kicking and the biting is gone. And, you know, she's just a real sweet, gentle horse now. So it's been a fun couple of months for us to work with them and to bring them around. And, you know, now we feel completely safe with them. And they've gotten to the point where it seems like they enjoy being around us as well. We can go out there and just whistle and call them, and usually they'll come running across from the other side of the property. And it's something that, as we've gone through this, there have been a lot of lessons that we've learned from it. One of them that he talks about a lot as you go through the training is you have to teach the horses these different things. You have to make sure they get the concept, and then once you know that, then you have to require obedience from them every time. They'll continue to test you, they'll try to get away with things, they'll try to push you and see if you're still going to be boss today. And so, you know, you have to teach it to them, and then you have to require it from them. And it's very similar to something that I've heard my parents say in raising children, how, you know, you have to have the same kind of attitude with children. And one of the things I think is interesting is you think about child neglect, and you think about parents who are absent or who are not involved at all in their kid's life. You think about children who maybe are going hungry and these kinds of things. It's all horrible, but I think that in the U.S. we have many children who are neglected even when they're around their parents, because their parents are not actually giving them attention, even if they're in the same room. Their parents aren't giving them instruction and direction, even when they're in the same room. And they are really neglecting their children even when they're right there with them. Teaching and requiring obedience and proper behavior from our children is really how to make those things stick. And if we require it inconsistently, then they're getting a message that's mixed and confusing, and they're just like the horses. You know, they're going to try to test the boundaries and see what they can get away with. And I think that anyone who's had children as they've grown up has probably seen similar behavior. When we had these horses, we didn't want to have them around if we weren't going to be able to have control over them, because it's a safety issue. You have a 1,000-pound animal there that really, if it wants to, it can do whatever it wants to do. You can't make it do anything. And so, you know, you have to get its respect and get it obedient, and, you know, in order for it to be safe for people to be around there. And we knew that we could do that if we put in the right amount of effort. But so many people will expect their animals to be obedient and responsive, but then make all sorts of excuses and have a lower bar for their children, who are infinitely smarter and more capable and really, you know, should have a much higher standard set for them. I've been thinking about a lot of those things, and it got me to thinking about how we teach our children, how we require our children to grow and to learn and to behave. And I wanted to talk about that, about teaching and requiring. I talked a little bit about permissiveness. There's also another extreme that you can go to. In the Wall Street Journal, there was an excerpt from a book. The book is titled Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, and it's from a Chinese-American woman. It's raised quite a bit of controversy in the last week. The book is Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, and the subtitle is, "This is a story about a mother, two daughters, and two dogs. This was supposed to be a story of how Chinese parents are better at raising kids than Western ones, but instead it's about a bitter clash of cultures, a fleeting taste of glory, and how I was humbled by a 13-year-old. And in the book, she talks about how she wanted to apply a very strict, what she classifies as a traditional Chinese upbringing for her children. It's very structured, and you push your children, and you know, you require a very high standard from them, but in some ways it's also kind of abusive. And she talks about how she would yell at them and insult them to try to encourage them to do their best, things that are, you know, really on the other extreme. And so it's raised a lot of ire in the last week with people who have read this excerpt from the Wall Street Journal. But one of the things that she rails against is what she calls permissive parenting. And it's the idea that you should just let your kids kind of find their own way. And really the most important thing for them to have is creativity. And there's not really any talk about building discipline and drive into children, because it can crush that creativity. I remember when I was in high school, there was a policy that was passed in the school district where you couldn't grade papers with a red pen anymore, because it was something that was going to be damaging to our intellects as students and crush our creativity, because mentally red means stop. So they forced all of the teachers to grade papers with a green pen. This was a policy that was passed in the school district, and you know, I have all of my papers and they're all graded with green pens. Green means go. Green means, you know, get out there and try and explore your creativity. I don't think it really made any difference to us, but somebody out there did some research and got paid a nice price, I guess, to come up with that policy. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. When we look in the Bible, what we see is that there's actually a balance that God expects parents to have. Ephesians chapter 6, and in verse 4, Ephesians 6, 4, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So the instruction here for fathers and mothers is to not provoke children to wrath. We shouldn't be provoking our children. We shouldn't be yelling at our children and insulting them. That isn't the proper way to get results. And it says here, bring them up in nurture and admonition of the Lord. We should be nurturing them. We should be encouraging them and helping them to grow. But at the same time, we do need to require a certain level of behavior and growth and output from them. Let's turn over to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21. Colossians 3:21, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." And that's something that can happen. If we are too tough on our kids, then it can discourage them. But at the same time, we should push our children to overcome boundaries and to realize that they can accomplish hard things. I think that's one of the problems with a lot of the permissive parenting that happens, is some parents, they don't want to push their children. They don't want to require them to do hard things and to break through these boundaries that are really self-imposed. And so, you know, we do need to encourage our children and push them. And that's really going to, in the end, help them have greater confidence and a greater understanding of what their abilities are. There's nothing like going up against something that you think, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. And then you accomplish it and you go, wow, you know, we did that. That's a good feeling, and it's a good lesson to learn, because throughout life you run into obstacles that you have to overcome. It should be a balanced attitude as we are teaching our children and requiring things from them. And it's the same kind of attitude that God has towards us as our Father. So even if we aren't parents or we only have grown children, there's a lot to learn here about our relationship with God, our Father, and how He teaches us and how He sets expectations for us. Now, when people think about teaching, a lot of times they think about reading and math and the kinds of teaching that goes on in a school. What I want to talk about today is the kind of teaching that we as parents should do. And it's really a teaching that's meant to develop the whole man, so to speak. It's something that we should be focused on, creating balanced humans as we raise our children. Balanced, enjoys a variety of activities, has curiosity and energy and drive and creativity and enthusiasm, and also discipline and all sorts of things that will lead to a life that's interesting and active and filled with adventure. So I have four categories that I think, you know, we should be teaching and requiring our children to grow in. And these are just four categories that I came up with that I think kind of represent that concept of the whole man, the balanced individual. The first category, which I think is the most important, is spiritual. We need to make sure that we are teaching our children the spiritual things that they need to learn. And there are basics like the Bible. What are the books in the Bible? How do you find the verses in the Bible in church services? What the basic layout is with the histories and the prophecies and the gospels and the epistles. We should teach our children the Ten Commandments and how they apply to life today, how we can put them to practical application. God's holy days, how each of the holy days represents a step in God's plan, God's form of government. And that's something that we can teach them from the Bible, but we can also teach them with our example and our household and how we act within the church. And those are the basics, and I think that a lot of us work on those with our children. But then, you know, there are more advanced concepts, too, that we can help them with. Things like, you know, the fruits of the Spirit and the church eras and on, all of the things that we need to know as we grow and as adults we need to make sure that we know them. And one of the other important things to remember, too, is that once you go over this, you should also review it and make sure that you still know it. It's the same way it is for us as adults. God has laid out the holy days so that we get a review every year. Every year we go through each step of the plan and we talk about all sorts of details. And if we need it as adults, then certainly our children are going to need it. Let's turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 11. Deuteronomy chapter 11 clearly lays out this requirement that parents have to teach their children the spiritual things. In verse 18 of Deuteronomy chapter 11, it says, "Therefore shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall teach them your children, speaking of them, when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up." So it's something that we should be teaching to our children all the time. And there are so many opportunities that we have to point out things that we need to apply in our life as we are sitting in our house, as we're driving somewhere, as we're walking outside. We can point out all kinds of things about God's way of life and the way that we should be treating our fellow humans, the way that we should be treating animals and nature. The opportunities are there all the time if we look for them. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 6, it says, "And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And you shall teach them diligently unto your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." So again, it's the same admonition. We should be teaching these to our children, and we should be looking for opportunities no matter what we're doing. And then one final time over in Deuteronomy chapter 4, this is laid out again. Three times right here in a row, we see the same kind of instruction. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 9. "Only take heed to yourself, and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, but teach them to your son and your son's sons, especially the day that you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said unto me, Gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children." And then let's just drop down to verse 13. It's talking about what happened on that day. In verse 13, "And he declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments, and he wrote them upon two tables of stone." In verse 9, it says, "Take heed to ourselves and keep our soul diligently, lest we forget." That's the same attitude that we need to make sure our children are developing too, where they're going to keep those diligently and they're not going to forget. We can help them to remember it by teaching it to them and over again reviewing it. Over in 2 Timothy chapter 3, 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15, this is a very familiar verse. 2 Timothy 3:15, Paul is writing to Timothy here and he says, "And that from a child you have known the holy scriptures, which are able to make you wise unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus." So Timothy had obviously been instructed in the scriptures, and he kept that and was able to put it into use through his whole life and became a very powerful servant for God. But it started when he was a child. And it's a unique opportunity that young people in the church have to learn that way of life from when they are a child and to be able to apply it throughout their life. A lot of people are called into the church as adults, and in a lot of cases they've had to learn lessons the hard way, and they didn't know about God's way of life, and they didn't necessarily know all of the things that they should have been doing, how to make right decisions. But as children raised in the church, our kids have a unique opportunity to learn that growing up from the beginning, and it can help them avoid a lot of pain and heartache as they go through life. If we teach it to them and help them understand not just what to do, but why it produces better results and why they should do it. And then, you know, it can lead them in a way of life that will produce greater happiness for them throughout their life. One final verse on this over in 2 John. There are so many things that we can be teaching our children. We're here on the Sabbath. How do our children behave on the Sabbath when they come to church? Are they peaceful? Do they listen? Do they try to learn from the messages that are given? Do they play appropriately on the Sabbath? What kinds of things do they talk about on the Sabbath? What do they read? What do they do with their time on the Sabbath? We need to make sure that we teach them these things. Children aren't born knowing any of this, and it's our responsibility as parents to make sure that we are teaching it to them. Here in 2 John, and we'll just start in verse 1, "The elder unto the elect lady and her children, whom I love in the truth, and not I only, but also all they that have known the truth, for the truth's sake which dwells in us and shall be with us forever." Verse 3, "Grace be with you, mercy and peace from God the Father, and from the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love." Now here in verse 4, "I rejoiced greatly that I found of your children walking in truth, as we have received a commandment from the Father." So John found some of the children in the church who were walking in the truth, who were living the right way of life and obedient and respectful. And, you know, he said that he rejoiced greatly. If John were to meet our families, would he say the same thing? What would his attitude towards our families be? I think for the most part, he would say the same thing. But, you know, we all have areas that we can improve in. And I know that, as I mentioned, you know, as we were working with the horses, we realized that within our family, there are a number of things that we can do better, that we can require a higher standard, that maybe we aren't teaching as much as we should have. And so, you know, now we're trying to put that into place. And I think that John, he went and he saw these families and he saw these children, and it was very exciting for him. It's the same way for God in heaven when he looks down at our families. So that's a very important category to make sure that we're covering as parents and in our role as teachers. It's the spiritual category. The second category I labeled as human. There's a category of kind of human traits that we need to be raising in our children. And this isn't human nature. This is really the proper human qualities that God wants from his children and his family. And I think under this category you have things like respect. We should make sure that our children are developing a respect for people, for friends, for parents, for siblings, for elderly people, a respect for property. You see this throughout the Bible, that there are rules to protect property and to make it right. If we destroy someone's property, if we hurt someone's animal, if somebody leaves something at our house and we lose it, you know, there's all of this stuff is laid out in the Bible because God expects us to have this basic respect for people and property. Things like sharing. We should be teaching our children to share, to be generous, to make sure that they're not selfish and developing a self-centered way of living and attitude. I think it's important for our children to have an appreciation of quality. God certainly does everything with a very high quality standard. We should teach our children how to appreciate that standard, how to recognize quality. Let's turn over to Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, Paul writes here, and he's giving some instructions on the kinds of things that we should think about, the kinds of things that we should be involved with and be discussing and participating in. "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. And you go through that list, and those are all positive things. They are all descriptions of qualities. If something is honest or pure or just or lovely or has virtue, is worthy of praise, it's going to be quality. So we should be teaching our children what true quality is and how to recognize that. Let's turn back to Philippians chapter 2 now. This is a verse that talks about that outgoing way of thinking. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 2. Paul says, "Fulfill you my joy, that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." And that's something that we need to really be applying in our lives. We need to make sure that we are looking out for other people and that it's not always just about ourselves and what we need and what we want. And that's a piece of human nature that we're all born with. And you see it in even in little babies where they get a toy and they don't want to share it. And something that you have to teach them. You have to help them understand that they need to do that because they don't just do it naturally. It is a very important part of what we need to teach our children. Another part that goes along with that is self-control. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 4. Self-control and discipline are key skills to have. And it's something that everyone who ends up being successful in life learns at some point. And really, it's about learning how to go without getting everything you want, whether that means not sleeping in that extra 30 minutes in the morning when you really need to get up and go to work, or whether that means not stealing something that you don't have the money to buy. Discipline and self-control, they're key to all of it. And here in Ephesians 4, it talks about one aspect of that as well. Ephesians 4:25, "Wherefore put away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another." And then in verse 26, it says, "Be you angry and sin not, or if you are angry, sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath." There's another translation of verse 26 that says, "Don't sin by letting anger gain control over you," which I think is a pretty good translation there. If we get so angry and we let it take control and we don't have self-control of ourselves anymore, then we're at a point where who knows what we're going to do, who knows what's going to happen, what we might be capable of doing. So it's very important to maintain that self-control. And verse 27, "Neither give place to the devil." Verse 28, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needs. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good, to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." And then drop down to verse 31, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be you kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you." If you look at that passage in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25 down to verse 32, what it really is it's kind of an instruction book for how to develop relationships with other humans. It's interesting, if you just go through all of the points that it lays out there, all of those things are keys to having good relationships with those around us. And we should learn those as adults, and we should be teaching them to our children as well, so as they grow up, they'll know how to interact and communicate with others. We have a lot of homeschoolers in the church, and that's something that, you know, homeschooling has developed a reputation at times of raising children who are introverted or maybe weird. And I think it doesn't have to be that way at all. But one of the things that we need to make sure we do is we give our children the opportunity to interact and communicate with others so that we can be teaching them the right way to talk, the right way to tell a story, the right way to listen. It's all important to know how, as humans, we should be interacting with each other. And if our children are homeschooled and maybe they don't have as much interaction as other kids, then we should find ways to make sure that they're able to participate in conversation. I went through public school and I got a pretty good education, but you know, there's a lot that goes on in school that I think you don't necessarily have to put your kid through to still get them educated. But at the same time, they will miss out on things if they aren't in public school. And so we need to be developing that whole person and making sure that they are getting the opportunities to communicate and interact. I think one of the ways that we can improve on the school experience is by teaching them early on how to communicate and interact with adults. They can learn how to sit and listen and learn from those who are older than us and who have more experience and who have a lot to share. That's a great skill to teach our children. Let's turn over one final verse here in this category of the human things that we should be teaching our children over in Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 32. Here in Leviticus 19 verse 32, it gives us one very specific instruction on relationships. Leviticus 19:32. You shall rise up before the hoary head, or the gray head, and honor the face of the old man, and fear your God. I am the Lord. So this is an instruction to respect those who are older than us, respect those who are advanced in age. It says here to honor them, and we should be teaching our children to do that. And, you know, this can mean making sure that when they come in the room that they get up and offer their seat to the person, you know, rise proactively. Not just sit there and wait until it's obvious that the person needs to sit somewhere. That's something that we can teach our children. But also, you can show that respect by what we were just talking about, listening and learning from those who are older and who have a lot to share. And there are so many other things in this human category that we can be teaching. We talked about balance earlier. There was a Roger Miller song that was called Where Have All the Average People Gone? And he goes through how, you know, the city folks say he's a country boy, and the country folks say he's city-fied, and the rich folks say he's poor, and the poor folks say he's rich. And the chorus, he says, funny, I don't fit. Where have all the average people gone? We should kind of be striving to be those balanced average people, you know, not to one extreme in any area. It really is something that can affect a lot of areas of our life. The other thing that we'd see is the parents of the children would just be ignoring them, and these kids would be running around crazy. And there was one lady in particular who had a couple of kids that were just totally out of control. And she said, well, you know, I teach first grade, and after dealing with it all day, I have these little six-year-olds running around. I just can't take it anymore. And so, you know, she was at school all day, and her job was to teach these six-year-olds, and then she had her own kids, and she just didn't want to deal with them. It's something where it's kind of like that child neglect that I was talking about earlier. Another time, her children were kind of running around and acting up, and she told one of them, she said, you don't seem like you're feeling well. Do you need some ice cream? A lot of things wrong with that, but you know, we need to make sure that we're giving our children the right kind of instruction and balance and teaching them how to act in public and all of these other things that kind of make up the human category. The third category, and this is the one that I think a lot of people think about when you talk about teaching, but that's intellectual. We should be helping our children to develop intellectually. Obviously, if you're homeschooling, then you know this is a responsibility that you've taken on. But even if your children aren't homeschooled, even if you are sending them to a public school or a private school, as parents, we still have a responsibility to stay involved and to make sure that they're developing intellectually in the proper way. You know, have we taught them how to study? Have we taught them how to actually go and learn something? It's a skill to sit down and study and understand what the highlights are, what the things you really need to remember are, how to take notes. These are skills that we should help our children develop, and those will come in handy throughout life. I know that in work, on a regular basis, I have to learn something new. There's a new technology that comes out. There's a new part of our industry that's developing, and I have to learn about it quickly and study up on it so that we can, as a business, stay relevant and competitive. And that's a skill that my parents helped me to develop early on. So how to study and how to learn, how to read and write. I think one of the skills that's been decline is how to really think logically, how to look at a situation or a problem and to lay out clearly what the causes are, what the effects are, what the consequences are, what the possibilities for change are, and to just run through that. And again, in work, I've seen over and over again, we bring people in and they don't really know how to think. They don't know how to take a problem and take it apart and start to work their way through it. It's a discipline that they never learn. So it's something that we should help our children understand how to evaluate data and make decisions off of it. There are all sorts of methods for that. One of the things that when I was getting my pilot's license, one of the things they talked about was the DECIDE model, and you know, DECIDE, and each of those is short for a step in making a decision. And the first D is for you define the problem. The E is you establish what the criteria are for solving the problem. For C, the C, you consider what the alternatives are to address the problem. I, you identify which one is the best. D, you do it, you develop a plan and you implement it, and then the E, you evaluate the results and see, did it work? Do I need to try something else? And it's something that you learn when you're getting your pilot's license, and they drill it into you and they ask you about it, and it's the model that you're supposed to apply while, you know, when your engine fails or something like that. I don't know how many pilots actually do that, but in theory, it's a pretty good way of doing it. I think it probably works better when you have more time to really think through a problem than when your engine has failed or your plane is on fire. But anyway, I mean, it's the idea of teaching them how to look at data and how to process it and be able to go through and make a decision. Over in Second Chronicles chapter 1, there's a story of Solomon just after he's becoming the king of Israel, which is a huge responsibility. Second Chronicles chapter 1 and verse 7. It says, in that night did God appear unto Solomon and said unto him, ask what I shall give you. Verse 8, and Solomon said unto God, you have shown great mercy unto David my father, and have made me to reign in his stead. Now, O Lord God, let your promise unto David my father be established, for you have made me king over a people like the dust of the earth in multitude. Verse 10, give me now wisdom and knowledge, that I may go out and come in before this people, for who can judge this your people that is so great? Solomon recognized that he would need an extra measure of knowledge and wisdom to be able to fulfill this role. Verse 11, and God said to Solomon, because this was in your heart, and you have not asked riches, wealth, or honor, nor the life of your enemies, neither yet have asked long life, but have asked wisdom and knowledge for yourself, that you may judge my people over whom I have made you king. Wisdom and knowledge is granted unto you, and I will give you riches and wealth and honor, such as none of the kings have had that have been before you, neither shall there any after you have the like. And as an aside, that's a prayer that we can ask. God has entrusted responsibilities to us, especially as parents. We have these children that we are trying to raise. And from personal experience, I can say that I definitely didn't have all the wisdom and knowledge that I needed at the beginning, and you know, still don't. And so that it's something that God can help us with so that we can make the right decisions as parents and throughout our children's lives, help them and guide them and give them good advice and teach them the things they need to know. Let's turn over to Daniel, first chapter of Daniel. This intellectual category, you might call it kind of the book learning category, and sometimes that's a moniker that gets attached in kind of a negative way. It has a negative connotation to it. And I think that in the church, we know that the education systems of this world are built on the wrong foundation. But if we are aware of that, and we stay involved in the teaching that our children get, we can make sure that they learn the good things that schools can teach without being led astray. Public schools are going to teach evolution and present that as fact, and that, you know, the world wasn't created by God. But we can make sure that they understand the truth and they understand that it's not a proven fact, actually. And even if we're homeschooling, we need to make sure that we are equipping our children with good knowledge, with good intellectual capacity, so that at some point, you know, they're going to go out and they're going to have contact with the world, and they need to be equipped to handle that. Here in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 1, I think it's interesting to see here some of what's described about Daniel and his three friends. Daniel 1:1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Verse 3, and the king spoke unto Aspenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes. And here were the qualifications. Verse 4, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, in whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So this is a description that definitely applied to Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because they were chosen. So it's something that having knowledge and, as it says here, understanding science, you know, it doesn't have to be a bad thing if we are involved in our children's lives and make sure that, again, they learn that in balance. Daniel was an amazing servant, a great prophet, but, you know, he was very well educated. I think the thing to remember is that you can develop intellectual sharpness and acuity and, you know, intellectual curiosity. The danger is when that turns into intellectual vanity. And that's something that many in the world suffer from. And I think in the past we've had that in the church as well, and it's caused problems. We have to make sure that we stay away from intellectual vanity, where we think that our brain is self-sufficient. You know, we can puzzle out all of the things required to live life. We can use our brain and think our way to an understanding of everything that needs to be understood. And that's kind of the attitude that many in the world have. They think that humankind, through its collective intellect, can solve our problems. But that's not the case. We know that that's not the case. That's what we need to watch for when we are trying to develop our children's intellect. Make sure it doesn't bleed into intellectual vanity. And at the end of Ecclesiastes, Solomon kind of touches on that. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 11. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. So he's saying that it's good to learn. It's good to pay attention to the words of the wise and to add knowledge. Then in verse 12 he says, and further by these, my son, be admonished. But of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. But at the same time, there's really no end to the number of mathematical theories and scientific theories and philosophical theories that are generated out there. And so, you know, it's good to learn, but that's not the goal in and of itself. The whole point is not to just constantly learn, and, you know, never really have an application in life, which I think many of us have met people like that. They're always interested in some new theory that comes out, and the farther out of the norm, the more exciting it is for them. And, you know, there's always going to be something like that. But then what he says here in verse 13 is, says verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So it's good to understand how the world works, how God created it, what the forces around us are, and to understand history and art and music. But remember that the whole point of it, the whole duty of man, is to fear God, to keep his commandments, to grow and overcome so that we can serve in the kingdom. So that's the third area, the intellectual category. And the fourth area, this is one that I know sometimes I neglect to teach because it just seems kind of like duh, but that's the practical. We shouldn't overlook the practical categories that we need to be teaching our children. And this includes things like simple things, brushing teeth, flossing and brushing, well, how to do it well, not just do it, but you know, how to eat properly, how to chew with your mouth closed and use proper manners and use utensils, all these kinds of things. We actually have to teach our children how to do them. Again, they're not born knowing how to do it. How to clean, how to make things neat and tidy, how to make a bed. When I was young, I remember, I think we lived in Shreveport, Louisiana, and there was a military base there, and I don't remember exactly how it came about. I just remember that it became a goal within the family, among the kids, to make your bed so that you could bounce a quarter off of it. Actually, it might have been somebody in the church who had talked about doing that in the military. You know, you had to make the bed so tight that if you threw a quarter up, it would, you know, the sheets would be so tight that the quarter would bounce. And, you know, in order to have the bed tight like that, you're going to have the sheets nice and neat. They're not going to be all wrinkled. You can't have the blanket thrown all crooked and just hanging off the side. How to really make a bed? It doesn't have to have a quarter bounce off of it, but, you know, how to do that well. And then as they get older, then things that are good life skills, how to cook and bake, how to mow. Right now, with the temperature change, the air in all of our tires was a lot lower. The air pressure had gone down because of the temperature change, and so, you know, we had to air up all of our tires. So we need to teach them how to check the air pressure, how to fill them up, how to fill a gas tank up safely. All of these kinds of practical skills that are really important in life. And, you know, it's amazing how many people go through life and they don't know how to do this. And you know, we had people in their 20s who had a flat tire at work, and, you know, not women, men, who didn't know how to change a tire. They didn't know where the tire iron was or the spare tire or any of these kinds of things. And it's something that, again, you know, you can take those opportunities that come up when you have a flat tire and you're thinking, oh, this is really inconvenient. Well, turn it into a learning opportunity for your children if they're with you. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 4 again. Just read a verse here. A very important practical skill is addressed in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28 says, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good." One of the things that I think sometimes we forget as parents is we have to teach our children how to labor. We have to teach our children how to really work and put effort into something. By default, that's not something that they know. Some children are more inclined than others to go knuckle down and really work at something, but even those ones, they don't really know how to work, how to do it effectively and efficiently and to focus on the right things. And it's another thing that I've seen over and over and over again in the working world. We have so many young people now who are raised with a sense of entitlement, and they come and they get their first job and they think that it's going to be like school where they passed every year and they got promoted, and, you know, college where somebody was there to tutor them and to help them get through, and then they get out there into the employment world and they want to know where the training wheels are. And it's something that we should make sure we don't neglect our children in that way. Let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 10. We'll hit a few verses here in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 3. "The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casts away the substance of the wicked." Verse 4. "He becomes poor that deals with the slack hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich." Verse 5. "He that gathers in summer is a wise son, but he that sleeps in harvest is a son that causes shame." Again, work when it's time to work. Just knuckle down, don't procrastinate, get the job done. Over in Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 6. Mr. Abasolo has an article, "Go to the Ant." That's what this passage here is about. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 6. "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest." And you think about that, and you'll see ants, and a lot of times you'll see single ants out there, and they're booking along as fast as their little ant legs will carry them. They're out there looking for food, looking for grass, for whatever it is that they need, and they will go get it, and they'll carry it back, and they'll do their job. And when they're doing that, you don't see a bunch of little ant supervisors following them around. You look at construction sites on the road, and sometimes you have as many supervisors as employees. But the ant's not that way, and that's the point here, is we should find out what our job is, and we should go do it without having to constantly be told over and over and over again. And so, as parents, that's something that we have to teach our children how to do that, how to work like that. Verse 9, Proverbs 6, verse 9, "How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of your sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come as one that travels, and your want as an armed man." Couple other verses here over in Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 4. Proverbs 13 verse 4. "The soul of the sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat." And that's that sense of entitlement. You know, they want to have, they desire to have, but they haven't developed the work ethic that actually leads to that. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 15. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 15, "Slothfulness casts into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger." when we teach our children these things, it's for their good. You know, here it says an idle soul shall suffer hunger. It talks about that, some of those other verses too. I'm sure none of us wants our children to grow up and be hungry. You know, we want to equip them with the skills that they need so that they can live successful lives as adults. And this is definitely a big one. Another one that I think is a practical skill, and one that isn't really taught in, at least it wasn't when I went to school, is financial responsibility and understanding of finances. Stay here in Proverbs and just turn over a couple chapters to Proverbs chapter 21. The Bible has lots of basic financial principles that you can go through. You can learn from other sources as well. But here, we'll just look at a couple here in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 17 says, "He that loves pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loves wine and oil shall not be rich." So if we have raised children that love to have, and spend money, when they get out on their own and maybe they don't have our financial support, it can be a pretty hard wake-up call for them. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. Proverbs 22 and verse 7 says, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." And as a country, we need to keep these in mind. This is one of the things that's going to play into the downfall of the U.S. is we, as a borrower, we are servant to the lenders. And we have a number of lenders. The biggest ones are Japan and China. And, you know, they're our friends right now, but it's a situation that isn't good for the borrower. You're in a position of weakness. And so, you know, we need to teach our children how to work hard and the basic financial rules of spend less than you make and don't get deep in debt. There's a quote that says, you know, if you never go in debt, you'll never go bankrupt. And, you know, that's not always something that we can manage in our life, but we should make sure that we don't just run up huge debts just for, as it says over in the other verse, you know, for oil and wine and for pleasure, which is what so many people do in our country. They get a credit card and they go out and they buy a bunch of clothes, or they buy things that they don't really need. They just spend it because it's there and they have access to it. I hope we can teach our children to have better financial understanding and responsibility than that. So there's a lot of practical areas that we can be teaching our children, from hygiene to thoroughness and care, how to work hard, and financial responsibility, and all of these things that will play into their life as they grow and become adults. Being out there on the ranch, it's definitely opened our eyes to areas where we need to improve, and it's given us a lot of opportunities to implement those things. There's a higher level of responsibility out there. There's a much greater requirement for work. There's always something that needs to be done. And if we don't all work hard and efficiently, then those things get left undone. It's actually been a great learning opportunity for us personally. But it's something that we can do in whatever situation we find ourselves in. Let's turn back to Proverbs chapter 19. We've talked about these four areas, four categories that cover a balanced variety of things we should be teaching to our children: knowledge and skills. And we talked earlier about how we need to do it in a balanced attitude. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 18 says, "Chasten your son while there is hope, and let not your soul spare for his crying," or another translation can be, "to his destruction." So it's something that we need to do it while they're young and while they're teachable and while we can have a big impact in their life. And then, you know, there's another verse that says, "When they are old, they will not depart from it." But in order for all of these teachings to take effect, we have to require it consistently. And as I mentioned, this is something that, you know, is important for us as parents, but it's actually exactly the way that God treats us as adults. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy chapter 10. God is the ultimate parent, and he gives us the perfect example. And this is how he treats us. He teaches us, and then we are responsible for what we know. In Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 12, it says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and to love him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you this day for your good. And those last three words there, that's really the crux of all of this. God requires these things from us. Fear Him, walk in His ways, love Him, serve Him with all our heart and our soul, keep His commandments and statutes, and He requires all of that from us for our good. And that should be the same attitude that we have towards our children. You know, this isn't something that we do with our children just so that they won't embarrass us or they'll make our lives easier when we're at home. It's for their good. If we are teaching them these things and raising them and requiring them to grow in this, then it will go well with them throughout their life. And that's, I think, the crux of what we need to learn from this. God has taught us, His children, these things through His church, and now He's requiring us to do them as well. And that's the same technique that we should use with our children. So we don't have to be permissive parents, we don't have to be tiger mothers, but we can be consistent about teaching our children these spiritual, human, intellectual, and practical things, the things that they need to know, and then requiring it from them, and we'll see that the results will be great.